Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Our bird experts are back to share their knowledge with you and answer your questions about our winged friends. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here. If you have a question about birds, call 800-348-2551. Maybe you want to share an exciting observation. 800-348-2551. I tell you this, based on the conversation the last few minutes in Studio A, this is going to be a real winner. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll wake up. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, a bunch of birds, and you right after the news. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Birds Today, and we welcome back Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Julie is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. It's salacious as it is. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's now a world traveler in his VW bus. And he's the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org for your bird questions. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Ray. Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you doing?
Julie Hart, you were in Florida, yeah?
I was.
Did you see any birds?
Lots of birds.
What'd you see? Anything new?
New? Florida scrub jay was a new one for me. It was my first time in Florida, if you can believe
really?
It.
Really?
Yep. And
did you go to Shoney's for the early bird special?
No.
Okay. All right. It's where the old people go. Okay. My grandmother used to go there. Oh, it's 2:30, time for dinner. What are you doing? What are you doing, Grandma? Hey. So anyway, you saw a scrub jay.
Yes.
What do they
Florida
look like?
Florida scrub jay. So they're related to our blue jays. So they're like a paler, grayer blue, with blue, white, gray. Yeah.
Impressive birds.
They're very noisy. They're very social. And they were right next to the trail where I was. And, yeah, they've given us a good show.
Are they nasty like the blue jays are? Boy, they're tough. They're tough.
I don't know them that well, but I think they're a little more friendly and tame than a blue jay. Blue jays are fairly aggressive, yeah.
Did you see anything else out there that you enjoyed?
Lots of manatees, which
was
lovely.
That's my favorite kind of bird.
I know, right? Alligators and some good butterflies and
cool.
lots of cool plants that I'd never seen before.
How far south did you get?
Down to Key Largo and Flamingo in the Everglades.
You know, yep. Key Largo was a disappointment. When I went down, my wife and I on our honeymoon went down to Key West. We drove down one day. You go, you get to Key Largo, you're in the Keys. You say, oh, this is great. Wait, it looks like
mangroves.
Wolf Road.
Exactly. Yeah, we weren't very impressed. We didn't go any further down the Keys.
But they have a great Arby's down there. So, I mean, that's key when you go down there in the Keys to have some Arby's, right?
Arby's, okay. We did go. I went snorkeling at the Coral Reef State Park from there. So that was nice. Yeah.
Rich Guthrie, did you go to the Keys?
Certainly did.
Yeah, this time? Did you go with Julie?
Negative.
No?
I will be going, though, so pretty soon.
It's such a great, it's like another world. It's great. You get down to Key West, it is like another world.
It is.
Amazing. So what's happening with you, man?
Things are good. We're right in a transition period between, well, summer's gone, autumn's here, winter's coming. And we're between autumn and winter. And right now, in fact, this is about the right time for seeing things like the winter birds. The golden eagles will be coming through any day now. And I'm headed down to Franklin Mountain down there in Oneonta, New York, where the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society has a hawk watch on top of Franklin Mountain.
This is the time, huh?
This is the time, November like this, and Thursday looks like the day.
Why?
Thursday.
But just the combination of delaying factors that held the birds back. and then the opening of a cold front with appropriate northwesterly winds that will push them through.
Oh, that's exciting. So good for you. You're going to bring your camera?
You betcha.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not going to see any this weekend when I go because I have to work.
They'll all be gone. They'll all passed over on Thursday.
All right. Well, fair enough. The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for our bird people or if you want to share a humorous anecdote about birds, let's go to Johnstown. Sammy, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Earlier in the summer, there were a bunch of crows going after a nest that were smaller blackbirds, and the blackbirds started attacking the crows, substantially larger than them, and they disappeared, those blackbirds, and went away and came back with a whole gang of them.
Oh boy.
To go after the crows.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen such a thing. What's up with that?
Yeah, that's a pretty fairly common behavior to defend their nests.
Blackbirds?
Yeah, particularly red-winged blackbirds. They will do it. There's a couple other species like eastern kingbirds, and there's a few of them that are very aggressive. And that's what they'll do. And they're super brave. They'll go after eagles even. I mean, they go after really big birds. And they mob
super
up.
Brave.
Yeah. And they'll get mobs, and you'll get 15 different species all together.
Really?
They're all going after.
It's like
after
the United Nations.
Predator. Yeah. It's like they all join up.
Yeah. They mobbed up. They mobbed up is what they did. I sat there and watched for the longest time. They went back and called all their buddies.
Yes.
Wow. That's
exactly what they do. Yep.
Well, that's cool. All right. Rich, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, they did it for good reason. Those crows were looking for a meal, and the eggs and baby blackbirds are on the menu. So they're doing their job.
See the nest. And...
Go ahead, Sammy. Go ahead, Sammy. Yeah,
I saw the mob. I saw the nests. There were multiple nests in a row of trees I have, and sure enough, I know they were nests in there, and they were, I guess, going after the babies or the eggs or something, but the mob, I mean, the dozens came back.
Wow, amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you for that, Sammy. Appreciate that observation. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. I was up on the roof taking the air the other day, maybe last week, and I saw, now I've seen crows go after birds of prey, and they'll sort of just go in and kind of like a fighter jet intercepting another country's fighter, and they push it away. This was interesting. This was a little bird, a very small bird, and they were sort of going at it, but for no reason, apparently. And then they just sort of tried to push this little bird out of the area of the roof of the station. Is that common?
Wait a minute now, is a little bird going after a little bird?
No, it was a bunch of crows.
Crows going after a little bird.
Yeah. Going after a little bird.
Just moving the.
Unless they thought they were going to get a meal out of it.
Would they go for a live bird?
Oh, sure.
Really?
But they give up on it quickly because they learn that those little birds are very agile.
It's funny. This went on for about 10, at least 10 minutes, and I was surprised that they didn't give up.
I'm surprised as well.
Was there any obvious food on the roof?
It was. So the roof of the station, and then they were maybe 30 feet over by the wires. I didn't really see if there was any food involved. But it looked like the same type of bird the next day, sitting right next to the big birds on the on the wire. I couldn't understand any of this.
Pictures.
I'm just thinking if there was like a French fry on the ground or something, and like a starling or a house sparrow was going after the French fry, the crows would go in and try to push those smaller birds away to get that French fry.
That's so interesting. Well, but, you know, you see a lot up there, and the crows always, every morning when I'm up taking the air, they'll come in and they'll have food in their beaks.
Somebody is serving them up.
rolls or yes, bread? Yeah. Or...
Somebody's doing that. And I know there are a couple of places in Albany where you can go and you could just hold out a piece of a roll or a piece of bread, and those crows will find you fast.
Yeah. Number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to David in Grafton. David, you're on.
Good afternoon. I always enjoy your program with regard to these remarkable creatures. Here's my question. It seems to me there are a lot more wild turkeys around than normal, on side roads, in the woods, on the highways. Is that in my imagination, or is there some reason for it?
Hmm. I think you're right on there. The numbers of first of all, when I was younger, not that long ago.
Hundreds of years ago.
Well, there you go. And there were no turkeys at all. But then a remarkable thing, the Environmental Conservation Department and the turkeys themselves joined in and repopulated the area.
Huh.
And it was a success beyond imagination. Then they go through normal fluctuations in numbers, where some years you will have few to none, and other years will have many to a lot.
And do you know why that is?
It's just a natural cycle of things. It depends a lot on the weather, mm-hmm. Population of predators in the area, and food availability. So yeah. It goes through natural cycles.
Yeah.
And you're right on top of a peak of one of those cycles, I believe.
Julie, yeah. Let me...
Thank you very much. I appreciate the information and the insight.
David, thanks for the call. Julie, let me ask you a question before we hit the break. Mm. Why would it behoove the state or any other government agency to repopulate, say, turkeys? Why?
I mean, well, I personally believe that every creature has some reason why they're in existence.
But I mean, the dodos are gone. I mean, you know, things change.
They probably had some sort of function, ecological function on those islands. But, you know, like turkeys are, you know, a main sport bird.
Okay, that explains.
And so the state is trying to provide sport for people.
I understand.
But they also are, you know, they're huge. They love acorns. They eat a lot of acorns. And so they're, you know, probably some sort of role in the maintaining the forest and the understory and all that as well.
So, you know, I've talked to DEC guys about this with regard to other species, you know, not birds necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always in my mind that maybe they're gone for a reason. I mean, maybe they're hunted out of viability, and maybe you bring them back for that reason, but maybe nature takes its course.
Well, we see that happen with things like the bobwhite quail and the ringneck pheasant and some of the other birds that were introduced for the sport community, and they simply were not adaptable enough for this area. And
but turkeys are native, and they were here in numbers, and we hunted them, and we chopped down all the forest.
That makes sense, yeah.
So I think it makes sense that we would bring them back.
Well, let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's Birds. It's Rich Guthrie. It's Julie Hart. We'll take a break. We'll be back. Government Mule, doing it to death with John Schofield helping out on guitar there. 800-348-2551. Don't forget, we have election coverage for you tonight beginning at 8 o'clock. We have Andrew Waite and Kalen Brown and Josh Landes and our whole cast of characters reporting from the field. It's politics. You know, on this program, politics is for the birds. That's why we're doing a birding show today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. And let's grab a couple of emails before we go back to the phones. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. This is from Dez in Cornwall. Just want to give a shout-out about Birdcast. I've got the app on my phone, and during spring and fall migration, I check it every morning and night. Last night, 11,900 birds crossed Orange County between 4:50 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. You guys familiar with that app?
Yes.
Sure. That's a low number.
That is, that's not very much. So, but we're getting on the end of the season.
It was raining a lot last night, and Yeah, they kept them down. But sometimes you see where there's millions going over.
Yeah. Millions? I think it stops November 15th, I think.
The app does?
Well, they only have it, they only do those predictions during the migration periods, like the main part of the migration season. So I think they stop in mid-November.
I don't know, but it's interesting.
But it's really interesting, yeah.
It's all radar monitoring.
So interesting. So do you like this app? Do you have this app, Julie?
Yeah, well, I just go on the website, but you can see what direction they were heading. You can see how high they were off the ground.
But you don't know what kind of birds, right?
You don't know what kind of birds, no.
But there are people out there who track the species by using monitoring the sounds that they make going over.
Ah.
And these different species, many of them have distinctive sounds that you can plug into an algorithm like Merlin and identify which one and essentially how many, roughly speaking.
Okay, this is from Annie in Williamsburg. And Annie, thank you in advance because my porous memory did not allow me to remember this in time to write it down for the show, but you've got it. What happens to a bird? This is from Annie. What happens to a bird such as the common cuckoo, which has shown up on Long Island recently, which is so far from its native European environs? Will it be able to adapt here? And that's from Annie in Williamsburg.
Well, you think that they could or should and might, but likely no. Because these are one of each kind, and they got their GPS backwards. They ended up going in the wrong direction at a bad time. And
they came
up
from Europe across 3,000 miles of ocean.
Yes, presumably. And, they're in a strange land all by themselves in a lonesome life. Whether they can make it back is highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Some of these birds come from Asia across the Bering Sea and do come down this way.
And
they have a good chance of making it back.
Yeah.
Even though their journey is much, much further.
Now, Julie, will birds occasionally, 3,000 miles, I don't know how you find an island to rest on or whether you go straight through without a rest stop. Will some birds occasionally just nest on a boat?
They don't nest, but they will land on boats.
And will they just go for the ride?
Yeah, they'll take a break. They'll get whatever insects are attracted to the lights on the boat until the weather comes down a bit, and then they will go on their way if they can get enough energy back up.
So, Rich, how do you think this cuckoo made it over here?
It came in on a storm. It came in on a storm that blew it across. And I've been on ships where birds have landed, and it's interesting to watch. The people on the ship will try to help the bird by going after it and picking up. The poor bird is exhausted. It can't fly. If it does fly, it goes 20, 30 meters off and then comes right back again because there's nothing out there. And it drives it. And then they try to feed it. The thing that these birds need out there is a quiet, safe place and fresh water. There's plenty of salt water, but they need fresh water.
Yeah.
And
so do they get it wrong or did you do
that?
They
get it wrong for the most part.
Well,
they get it wrong.
When you were on the boat and it happened, you knew what to do, right?
I did. But, even with that, it didn't work. I mean, I was talking, we're maybe 50, 60, 70, 100 miles out to sea.
Yeah.
And these birds come and land on the deck. They hang around for a little while. They fly off, come back, and it's just a matter of if the ship gets back to land shortly enough, they might make it. And that's why we end up with some birds we call ship assisted.
Okay, so that is a thing.
That is a thing. One of the concerns about some of these rarities that show up along the coastal seaports. And the suspicion, first off, is that they came in on a boat.
Ah, okay. Number here is 800-348-2551. Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. What could be more exciting from a radio standpoint than talking to Merle and Argyle? Merle, you're on. He does this every time.
I'm ready for you, Merle.
He does this every time.
Merle, hearing aids.
Hearing aids in, Merle. Make your sandwich. We'll give you another 12 seconds. Hello, Merle. Earth to Merle.
Come on.
I can tell. There he is. Oh. Hello, Merle.
Merle.
Merle, what are you doing, man? This is a radio show. Come on. He's gone. Okay, you know what?
I did my research.
What was the question? What was the question?
Well, I believe the question was, he had heard that birds were starting to feed and like forage earlier in the day.
Yes. And he was dissatisfied with our answers. He does that a lot.
We didn't have an answer, and then we forgot to look it up. And now he gave me homework last time, 2 weeks ago, and I did my homework this morning. So
I don't know. Should we wait? And
Do we wait till he calls back? He's calling back. He is calling back.
Presumably, he is now. Okay. Has his full arsenal of hearing devices implanted in his ear.
And his tuna fish sandwich ready to go.
Yeah, we'll go to Merle in a moment as soon as he gets through the arduous screening process. We'll take somebody else in advance. Let's go to Bill in Blooming Grove. Bill, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. And it's one of my favorite Vox Pop shows.
Oh, thanks.
My question is a behavioral question about birds. I have this. Looks to me to be a couple of cardinals, and at my bird feeder, one will feed at the bird feeder, and the other one will stay on the ground and watch. And then at some point, they switch places. So my question is, and they seem to come back year after year. My question is, are there such a thing as a couple that sort of marry cardinals? And have you seen this kind of thing where they kind of protect each other? One eats, the other one watches out for predators, and then they switch. They make a signal or something and switch places. How does that work?
That's romantic. All right, Julie, what do you think?
Yeah. So, it's probably a mated pair. Cardinals do have pair bonds, and they will persist from year to year. And then the behavior that you're seeing, I've seen it at my feeders as well. It's called mate guarding.
Mate guarding.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of species birds that will do that. And they are watching their mate to make sure that they're safe and make sure that no other, another male doesn't come in and try to take his female or that kind of thing. It's called mate guarding.
And do they make some sort of signal to change places?
They may call to each other, but often I don't normally hear that in my yard. They might just fly down and then the other one.
Bill, it's changes. When the wife is good and ready. That's when the signal happens.
When she's at her fill.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, it's your turn now, babe. Okay. Hey, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Rich, you want to say something?
No, I'm good. That was good. Actually, it is kind of fun to watch. It is cute. So
now,
cute.
Listen.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. You ready for the
Merle?
Merle? All right, Merle, be ready with your hearing aids, because here we go. Earth to Merle. Hello. Hello. Testing. You're there. Go ahead.
All right. Homework.
Homework.
Did you guys do any homework?
Yes, Julie did homework.
At your behest.
Can you?
And I got a Maori question.
Okay. Now, first, Merle, can we recapitulate the problem that Julie was researching? What was the question from last time?
All right. The NPR fake news.
right off the bat.
saying that birds are eating earlier in the day.
Okay.
And I'm saying it's climate change.
You're saying
go
it's,
ahead.
All right. You're saying it's climate change. Julie Hart?
Yes.
Okay. So I think it's the research that I found about them eating earlier in the day is mostly in urban areas where there's light pollution, because most of our birds are very visually oriented and they're using their vision to capture prey. But where you have places that have a lot of light pollution, they will sing longer in the day. They'll start singing earlier. They'll sing later in the day. They eat earlier. They can eat later in the day. And so that's the main thing that I was finding.
Okay. Fair enough. Now,
does that sound familiar?
Merle, you going to be satisfied with that one? Good?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm happy.
Damn.
All
right.
All right.
Good.
All right. Mallard question.
All right. Mallard.
Yesterday, I saw a very interesting mallard situation. A bunch of males were dive bombing a pond. and they would hit the water at like 45-degree angle, swim underneath the water for about 6 or 8 feet. Some of them would even go straight up in the air and back down again. Now, is this a mating thing? I just read in the book that some birds are mating now. Mm-hmm. There were several females around, but I think it was mainly the male doing this dive bombing into the pond.
Rich, what do you think?
It's a good question, and I've seen this happen as well, not only with mallards, but other waterfowl like Canada geese will do similar sorts of behaviors. And Merrill, I think you got your own homework assignment there now. Mallards and other waterfowl will bond up, will pair up this time of year and maintain a committed bond or pairing through the winter, right into the spring. And what you may be seeing there, and Merle, you might take some notes on this, is that the males are kind of like showing off. They're kind of like the teenage kids doing their acrobatic tricks on their bicycles.
Yeah.
Is the book wrong about this is a mating season right now for mallards?
Yeah, it's
ducks.
Pairing up season.
Yeah.
They'll bond up. They'll find their mate, maybe the same gal as last year. And they'll hang together through the winter, the two of them together.
So divorce season is in the spring?
Well, it could happen any time, but depends on the next male along the line.
All right, fair enough.
It was fascinating to watch. I mean, they were just dive bombing the pond.
Wow. All right. So you know what to do now, Merle? You know what your assignment is, right?
Yeah, look it up.
No, Merle, you have to take notes.
Watch.
And ask the expert.
No. You become the expert on it.
All right, Julie, explain what Merle has to do, and then we're going to dispatch him.
He's going to observe this behavior more.
Okay.
And see if in a couple of weeks, probably, if one male will then be, staying side by side with a female.
Okay, so the pairing up.
Right, so he'll observe that pairing up, and he'll see the other males going off with other females.
All right, Merle, what do you think? Are you all right with this assignment?
Yeah.
All right, brother.
My assignment is to go look in a pond.
Go look in a pond. Hey, Merle, thank you. 800-348-2551. You know, the volume levels can go up and down when we talk to Merle, and it's always fun to watch Zach the engineer's face trying to ride the gain on the board. Well done, sir. All right, you can take a rest now, because we're going to go to Shelburne Falls with the well-modulated Lynn. Lynn, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Lately, I've been hearing barred owls, and I used to hear them in the spring generally, but What are they doing this time of year?
Okay.
Yeah, so owls are also starting their courtship.
Same thing.
Yeah. Okay. I've been hearing the great horned owls in my backyard for a month or so now, actually, for quite a while. They started a little early this year.
And they're also kicking the kids out.
They're kicking the kids out?
Yeah. There's also that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, good luck to them, eh?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you.
Yes, all right. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. Too much excitement for me. I need a little rest. And so we'll be back at 800-348-2551. Jerry, there's the Grateful Dead bird song. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's birds today, and believe me, I picked the songs for these shows in advance and completely separate from the shows, so that just sort of came up. Isn't that serendipitous?
That's you, Ray.
Isn't it? Well, it's just lucky, I guess. Mary Lou in South Burlington, Vermont writes, "I'm always happy to hear and see the red-winged blackbirds in early spring. By late July, early August, I no longer hear or see them. What happens to them?"
They're done.
They're done breeding. They move. They get into big groups, and they move around, and they're foraging and starting to migrate south.
And how far south will they get?
New Jersey.
Really? That's all? It's not that far.
Well, many of them will go much further, but yeah. We're at the northern fringe of their overwinter range.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And New Jersey is kind of more into it. And then when you get down to South Carolina, Tennessee, and Louisiana, they're in deep.
Okay. This is from JL. I've been caring for a large woodland parcel in the Adirondacks for 2 years. I've become greatly invested in the well-being of the wildlife. I'm an audio engineer through my bachelor's, but I've been working to move into ornithology. So far, this has involved volunteering at a raptor rehab facility, attending bird walks, as well as events with the Albany Pine Bush Preserve. The main hurdle in this pursuit has been networking. Given I'm starting with less background than others, I've kept up to date with opportunities through the Ornithology Exchange and elsewhere, though they haven't resulted in anything thus far. My questions: what resources can you recommend for the Northeast Adirondack region for someone with less official background but plenty of relevant experience with birds, outdoors, and working with field data? Thanks for everything. And that's from JL.
I have to ask if you're familiar with the eBird app and their night flight recording. There are a bunch of experts on that particular aspect of eBird.
Oh, you mean the audio aspect?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They record the night sounds. I mentioned earlier that these, where the birds will be calling back and forth, they record those and they plug them in and analyze the sounds and pick up the migration over through the course of the night.
Interesting.
And that's it's a fascinating field. Let me tell you, I'm just impressed with these guys' abilities and gals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Ornithology Exchange is definitely the number one place to go to look for ornithology jobs. In the Northeast, in Northeastern New York, I would say keep doing what you're doing. The Pine Bush, the local Audubon chapters, the bird clubs, like the Adirondack Loon Preservation Committee, you know, some of those nonprofits. It's tough right now to get into this field, and I feel like there's just a lot of competition.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of trained people out there, and there's not as many jobs, and they don't pay very well. But if you can afford to do an internship, that's often a good way to start to build your network that way.
Interesting. You know, we have no idea if this JL is tired of being an audio engineer. But yeah. Rich's idea is an interesting one.
Yeah, so there's plenty of opportunity to combine those two skills, for sure. And there's a lot of research being done right now for using ARUs, autonomous recording units. And so, you know, going back to school, getting a master's in ornithology, using that sound recording experience, and that's another possibility as well.
And you think about digital signal processing and AI and what they can do now, mm-hmm. for instance, the Beatles and taking these demo tapes and cleaning them up with AI. You think that with bird recordings, you should be able to isolate particular birds with artificial intelligence or digital signal processing and really come up with some amazing stuff. So maybe that'll work. This email from Alice: perhaps the male mallards, Merle. Perhaps the male mallards that Merle observed were trying to stir up food from the bottom of the pond.
That's that could Alice. Be, but it's not. They do that, but not in that fashion. The pond sounds a little deep if they could go down to 8 feet or so, and that's a little deep for food for mallards. Other ducks will do that. But mallards are surface feeders for the most part.
Let's go to the phones, and in Cambridge is Judy. Judy, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You
I
bet.
Have a quick question about red-winged blackbirds. We have a farm on a hill in Cambridge that we get all the wildlife, and we feed the wild birds all year round without fail. So every spring, I look forward to the arrival of the red-winged blackbirds, as a previous person already commented, because that's the beginning of spring for me. About 3 or 4 years ago, I was standing at the kitchen sink watching the birds feeding on what I put out, and a whole bunch of blackbirds were there. I can't tell one from another. They all look pretty much the same. And when most of them had left, the seed had run out, and there was this one bird left over, and he made this sharp calling sound. And so I went immediately and put out some more seed. And over the course of that spring, over and over again, I would this one bird would sit in a branch somewhere and yell at me to come out, and it got to be a thing, you know. And it went on for that whole year, and then they migrated away, came back. Next year, I had the same thing happen, and the following year as well. So I'm wondering, could it be the same bird each time, or are they all smart enough to yell at me through the window to get out?
Well, what do you think, Julie?
I think it could be the same bird, but they are smart as well. So it sounds like you may have more than just red wings. You may also have some grackles and other stuff in there.
It's definitely the red wing, because as soon as I put the seed out, he would come right down and eat it.
Oh, you could see the red.
And he had me really well trained, but I just wonder, it could be the same bird a few years in a row, but it just keeps on happening, so... Do they
at some
teach
point
their offspring?
Yeah, at some point it probably is a learned behavior, and other birds have picked
somebody
up that
else,
behavior.
Yeah, something that observed it and saw that it worked.
Rich.
Well, okay. I can say that I've had the same bird come back year after year after year after year for a good 10 years, and it would do the same repeated behavior that I knew it was the one out of the flock of the others. It had a way of approaching.
Right.
And it was very consistent. And so.
But how do you know for sure unless you tag it?
I don't know for sure, but the uniqueness of its behavior, it would fly. This was a gull. Mm. This was a ringbill gull. And it would fly out over the river, come back in a counterclockwise direction. All the other ones were scrambling overhead in an unorganized pattern. This one had the same pattern, the same air flight. And it would come in at a low, slow glide right towards me.
Huh.
And then I could throw up a piece of food and catch it in the air while the other ones were scrambling, trying to figure out what's going on here.
Okay. Well, Judy, thanks for the call. That's an interesting one.
Yeah. And I knew it was the same one. And he would come back in the spring and then move further north for nesting and then come back in the autumn on its way back south.
So that's an either very smart bird or a very dumb bird, right?
No, he's very smart.
Really?
Yes, he chose good company.
Okay. Claire writes in, I understand that having a crow as a friend is very beneficial. How do I attract them and get them to like me? And that's from Claire.
My favorite topic.
Yeah, that's rich.
Here we go, Dr. That's Doolittle. Rich. All right, get ready, Claire.
Do the same thing predictably and persistently and patiently. And eventually the crow will know you and very well. And then he'll bring his friends, and you'll have a bunch of crows happy to see you.
All right.
And don't ever do anything that they don't like.
Why? Because they remember?
They will remember, and they will be mad at you forever and ever.
What won't they like? I mean, I've never had a crow friend before. And,
well, do you throw sticks at them? Or
no, I don't. I like,
don't do that anymore.
I like the birds. All right, let's go to Clifton Park. Tony's on. Hello, Tony.
Hello. So question about my bird feeders in my backyard. So we love watching the birds, and we have several bird feeders out. But lately, I have one bird that starts pecking at my house as well. And I think it's a blue jay, but I'm not sure. I'd like it to stop doing that, but I don't want to do anything that would harm it. Any advice?
Well, this is a recurring theme, and there is an ultrasound audio device out there that I am told, I haven't tested it yet, but I intend to, that will deter the birds. And unfortunately, you'll have to do a little looking up, but there is an ultrasound device that you can hang out of doors that, as I am told by a trained wildlife biologist, that it does work.
Huh.
Will that deter them from going to his feeders, though? Because
you got to believe.
We're talking about woodpeckers and that were feasting on the side of the firehouse in this case. And they weren't feeding the birds. So
yeah, I would certainly not want to deter them from going to the bird feeder, but I certainly don't want them to peck on my house.
Yeah. Oh, right. Well, you can try it out and see what happens. Check it out online. The device I was thinking of, and unfortunately I don't have or can't mention the name, but it's under $40 that you can pick up out there.
Splendid. All right. Well, Bert, good luck with that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony. Let's see. Delmar. Diane is in dear old Delmar. Diane, you're on.
Hi. Thank you. Yeah. Here's my question. It's about some house sparrows. a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, some house sparrows moved into my garage, and they nested in the light that comes with a garage door opener thing, mechanism. And I'm a bird lover, bird watcher, bird feeder. I love the show. I listen all the time. They moved in, but then their friends followed and their offspring followed until lately I suddenly had like 40 or 50 sparrows nesting in the roof.
Oh my.
Isn't that annoying? They're so annoying. So annoying. Yeah. All right.
Okay. So they were nesting up in there and tearing out. It was like a layer of insulated board that covered the ceiling of the garage, and they pulled it apart and made nest after nest until there was just bird poop all over everything. And I finally got somebody to help me clean it out, pulled the board down. I waited till spring after all the babies had been hatched and everything. So I waited till summer, but pulled it out early summer because, you know, there were all the babies had come out. We saw the babies. I mean, they would yell at you every time you go in the garage and panic and everything. I feed you. Shut up, right? Well, so I got them evicted. I'd also repaired the garage floor where they were sneaking in under the door. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is, anytime I open the garage in the daytime, daylight, a bunch of them fly back in. They start calling everybody.
Yeah.
Good news, guys, we're back. Yeah, and they chirp really loudly, and they try to find new nesting places, and I kick them out. And my question is, have they found someplace else to live through the winter? Or, I mean, am I dooming them all to death if I don't let them back in?
Oh, boy.
Anybody know?
they'll find someplace else to go.
Sure.
Yeah.
Your neighbor's
house.
Will
find, well, yeah, exactly. They'll find some bushes other.
But they sit in a tree.
Yeah.
And just like the birds yell at me to come fill the feeder, too. You know, they do that. I have that behavior.
Yeah.
But they yell at me when I go outside, and they'll sit in the tree by the garage and yell at me.
So annoying.
And I don't want you to move back in there. Yes. But I don't want them to. Yeah. I don't want to think I killed them.
No. They'll find another place to go.
You agree, Rich?
They'll find it. They'll be all right.
I agree that they are very annoying. The house sparrow is one of they sit there and they just do not stop.
Yeah.
They're loud chirping. I'm trying to find peace and quiet, and I'm listening to these guys yelling in my right ear.
Yeah. Ours stay in bushes, right?
Yeah, they stay. They hang out in the bush.
I've invested in a leopard. It's actually worked very well. Yeah.
Okay, watch out for your hamburger, though.
No, Diane, I didn't do that. good luck with yours.
I feel much better.
Yeah, good luck with yours. Appreciated. Susie in Aiken, South Carolina, who's a regular correspondent, says, I was wondering when the mating season was for owls. I have a pair of, I believe, great horned owls that call me every morning in a tree outside of my bedroom for at least an hour. One call is higher pitched than the other. It's been going on about 2 weeks. Will they nest there? This is in a tall magnolia tree.
Yes.
It could be?
Yes. It sounds like a bonded pair, and right now they're doing their reaffirmations, and they're planning on staying there.
You think they would nest in the magnolia, though?
No,
that seems a little small.
No, they're just using
me.
That tree as a sounding board.
Yeah, I think they'll nest in a taller, like a pine tree or something like that nearby, but not in the magnolia.
But they like you.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines to Amherst, and we go to John. You're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Question is about pileated woodpeckers and woodpeckers in general. Growing up in Slingerlands, we used to see them pecking away at a tall catalpa tree outside our house, and living in Amherst now for well over 30 years, we hear and see them frequently, tops of trees and such, but we've never seen one at the feeder. This winter, early spring, we kept a good supply of suet out. We saw every woodpecker in creation, and one day I looked out at the feeder and saw this pterodactyl hanging out on the suet. And never, ever seen one at a feeder. And it came for about 2 or 3 weeks after that, just keep dive bombing the suet. Is that regular behavior for pileated woodpeckers once they find a food source in the winter or spring, or is that unusual?
They're known to be feeder birds. I haven't been able to get them into my yard. They'll stay in the trees, and they don't come into my feeder. But no, I know other people that have them at their feeders all the time. So... I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a normal behavior. I'm not sure what makes them come in or not, but they do make suet feeders that have a longer like board underneath the cage. And so they're,
which we have.
Okay, yeah. And those are designed to support a pileated woodpecker because they're a larger bird than the other woodpeckers. So so you do need that to start with. But then, yep.
Rich.
Yeah, they're infrequent visitors to feeders, and they're usually a little reticent to come into the yard area. But once one of them learns to like you, you're in like Flynn. And I was happy to see them this year feasting on the spotted lanternflies that were on the ailanthus tree.
Interesting.
Yes, and I've since taken out that ailanthus tree because I just don't like spotted lanternflies.
I agree. John, thanks for the call. Let's quickly go over to Gardner, New York, and it's Keith's turn. Keith, you're on. You have about 2 minutes here. Go.
I've always wondered, birds that are not killed, how and where do birds die of natural causes?
They find a reclusive area they can and try, you know, in their own way, try to sit out the storm. And in the, you know, in the increasing outcome of their last moments, they just kind of falter there. And since they are frail creatures, usually in a tucked away hidden spot, that's where they'll be.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree.
And they just drop dead, and that's that.
Well, in so many words,
that's pretty much it for all of us, actually.
Yeah, and then somebody will come along and eat the carcass. Yeah.
For every egg that hatches, a bird dies.
Ah, well, that's wisdom right there. All right, this is from John. It says, I might have an answer for the guy who had a woodpecker attacking his house. I had the same problem, and then when I looked at the spot on the house, I saw a now-defunct grounding wire that the bird was perching on. I ripped the wire off the house. No more woodpecker attacks.
Yeah.
Oh. Aha!
Well, they have ways of hanging on to vertical features, so...
And then Fran writes in, a caller months ago on your show said to put out suet chunks since we have done this to stop birds from pecking at your house. There has been about 90% improvement, many less holes in our cedar house. That's from Fran.
An alternative, that's all about food in that case, and it seems to be working. But the food that was there may still be there, so it's just a matter of time.
All right, we only have about a minute here, but let's go to Rich in Schuylerville. Rich, make it quick, buddy.
Hey, I see that red hot pepper in suet keeps the squirrels from eating the suet. Can I add red hot pepper into my sunflower seeds so that the squirrels won't eat all of my seeds?
Yes, that works.
Yeah, and I think they sell some places will sell seed with the hot pepper on it as
And you can mix your own cayenne pepper into it, and you know, squirrels do not like hot food, you know, spicy food.
And the birds don't taste it.
And it won't bother the birds.
Does not bother the birds, from what we can tell.
Well, thanks, Rich. You know, it's one thing though for not tasting it, but it's quite another to have heartburn. I mean, can the birds have some digestive issues from this?
Apparently not. Reptilian origins, they avoid that kind of problem.
All right, fair enough. Well, we're done here. Rich, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
My name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, at gmail.com, G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
At Gmail, right?
At gmail.com. And no slashes, lines, dots, and dashes.
Okay. Julie, I don't know. Do you want people to get in touch with you or not?
Sure. It's julie.hart@dec.ny.gov.
All right. We're back on schedule now. Remember, we did a show a couple weeks ago because the Fun Drive 86, our show early in the month last month. We're back on schedule, which means we'll be on early next month, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, first Tuesday, December.
See you both then. Support comes from Paint Care, recycling of leftover paint, stain, and varnish, now available year-round at over 350 paint stores at other sites in New York. More at paintcare.org. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Once again, thanks to Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie for being here today. Thank you for listening. Wonderful calls, as always. Great emails, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy, who successfully navigated the volume variances of Merle from Argyle. Well done, sir. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's the Copyright Forum. If you're an intellectual and you have intellectual property, call us tomorrow at 2:00.